It is Saturday, the 11th of August, and this is episode 130 of Digital Outbox. Hello, I am Chris. I am joined tonight by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Hello, I am Chris. It is Ian.
It is Ian indeed. And this is a very sad day because there is but one more day of Olympics to go. Or in fact, one more evening session, really. A bit more tomorrow morning. That's it. Done.
Only one more programme where Gabby's on. Gabby's programme at night's been fantastic.
Because I've been watching it all through the day, I haven't really caught up with all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I just watched it all again.
I would happily watch it all over again, yes. The Olympics are nearly over, which is very sad. And that's part of the reason why we're a bit late, but also because we've been flat out busy. So sorry, we're a little bit late this
but Olympics,
week.
Olympics have been great.
But? There's something even greater that's happened, including Sky Crane.
Oh, the Mars landing. I got up. Do you know how I've lost it today? But I did warn you beforehand, and it is in bold writing with lots of exclamation marks about Mars landing. But when you said there's something even greater, I was like what? The Olympics have been the best thing ever.
What could be greater than the Olympics? And they're on a par with each other for me. But no, that was truly incredible to see the Mars landing, which is surely was never going to work. I mean, they've fired things at Mars before. You know, they've tried to bounce something onto the thing. They've tried to parachute it down. So no, what did they do? Let's try doing a floating spaceship and crane down a mobile rover.
I got up especially to watch it. And it was great watching a room full of, obviously, guys that spent years, but a room full of geeks that don't get out much.
Listening to numbers and getting excited. Yeah,
the only thing that could have made that better is if they pumped out Thunderbirds music at the same time. Just as they deployed the sky crane.
And how excited you could get over a 36 by 36 pixel thumbnail coming down.
That was the best ever.
It was brilliant. But no, it was a very good feel-good thing. Olympics plus Mars landing. What more could you want? Oh, an episode of Digital Outbox. There you go. Tip you over the edge. So let's get on with some news. And we're going to start today with T-Mobile. They're backing away from a deal. They step away from the deal. Now, this was their full Monty deal, which gave you everything. So it's unlimited calls, texts and data, and all for £36 a month. Sounds like a bargain. But recently, their latest advertising has taken away tethering as an option. So you are no longer allowed unlimited data via tethering, which I think we're going to see more of, because there's no way that a mobile network can cope at the moment with people's data needs.
Probably, I think Three will probably still stick to their, just because they seem...
Well, that's the only reason they've got customers.
I think that's harsh, harsh but true. It just seems a bit, it's usual with these things. It's like they made a big hoo-ha when they launched this, and it's the only reason I put it in the show notes this week, because we covered it. It was like, you know, okay, we've said before, you know, you get full this and full that, but other people have said it and we're going to deliver. Full Monty, anything you want, you've got. Pay £36 a month, you've got it. And you thought, fair enough, it's a bit steep, but that's a good deal.
But that actually seems, for everything, that actually seems not too bad. I guess that doesn't include a phone. That's just the contract for the actual thing.
Yeah, but it's still seemed a fairly good deal. And to turn around and say, by the way, if you're a new customer. So they're saying if you're an existing customer, you still get
Is it grandfathering in there? So you keep with your existing.
But I can see that just disappearing next year.
I don't actually know how you control tethering anyway via some of these phones, because the phones have the option. So I guess it's just there as a to tell people off if they are consuming lots of data. It just seems at the moment like, yeah, mobile data is not the place to go for your expensive data needs, basically.
No, it's O2. And he showed me what happens. O2 don't cut you off, but they throttle you down to like 1 GSM.
Really useless for anything.
So it goes from like it's all fine to nothing, but they still see you've got a connection.
He's still got
it. just doesn't work.
So there's the jokes about the full Monty, but leaving the hat.
Well, I'm just thinking. I'm just. I'm, oh, you are on. I was actually just thinking when you started, usually this is when I come in and say, what a bunch of cocks. And I think I'm going to start up the cock list.
The cock list.
on the website, T-Mobile are the first members of the cock list.
Trademarked. Microsoft have had to drop their Metro brand. So Metro was the whole tile interface, which is what they obviously want to be known for at the moment. But they've had to kill it off. So they were talking about having talks with important partners in Europe somewhere. And I think it turned out that there's someone does own the Metro brand, and it's obviously close enough in spec as far as they're probably in the same, maybe they're in computing. I don't know the actual details of who owns that brand, but they're not allowed to use it anymore. So initially they were going to be called Windows 8 Style UI until they could find a better name. And since then they've just talked about it being a modern UI style.
It was a German retailer called Metro AG is believed to be the reason why they can't use it. They've not actually officially said. This is just a train wreck.
What's the jumps?
Microsoft started spinning this as, well, we never actually said Metro was going to be a brand.
Yeah, but they've been investing in that.
They have. They've been doing it for 18 months. There's a whole lot of things where there was a whole lot of terms and conditions where if you put your app in the App Store, they were going to say it was Metro style and all this kind of stuff. So turn around and say, by the way, that was only a code name is guff. And then to turn around and say, we might call it Windows 8 style UI or modern UI style.
I think that they're literally, that's just what they've been, because they've been told to stop, I guess, using Metro immediately. That's certainly what came down in the employee dictate that got leaked. But yeah, so I'm sure they'll find another suitably random word. Because Metro, okay, we now know what it means. And now we're going to have to unlearn that. Because it was the Germans. Valve via their Steam network, they're going to actually start selling other software come 5th of September.
Interesting, very interesting move.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming.
No, seemingly it had been rumored ages ago, and there was some adverts about it, and I certainly missed it. This movie also explains why they're so annoyed at Windows 8 and being a train wreck, because it comes with its own store as well. So,
right. That was probably, yes, feeding into that. So they're going to use their existing, I guess, software and all the kind of things that go along with that software. So they've got auto-downloading, auto-updating and things like that that come as part of their platform. So you will be able to... They talked about creative software. So I'm guessing Adobe might come on board here. Well, that's another way to sell, you know.
And in the same way that when Apple have really succeeded with things like app stores, just because so many people have got iTunes accounts already, you know, so instantly you're already set up to pay.
Yes, and so is Steam.
Yep. You know, so if you log on one morning and all of a sudden I'm sure there'll be free options, there'll be demos, etc. This is really good.
Yeah, it's the thing is, it is just the gaming community. So whether they can spread their brand wider, maybe they can. Maybe this is a way of doing that. I don't see it at the moment, so I think it's very much going to be a spread through the gaming community. But then again, Steam is probably the biggest platform of gaming people around at the moment.
Absolutely,
I think that's probably overstating it a bit.
I'll agree with you, don't worry.
Here we go. Here comes a fight. Another Kickstarter style project. Ian's got all excited.
No, this one's and it's not the Kickstarter. I'm living in a bubble. And I'm quite aware my bubble's going to get burst, but I'm living in that bubble.
So this is a new social network called app.net. Now basically, I mean, why don't you talk us through app.net?
Second entry to the cock list is Chris Hutchinson. Yeah.
Can I go in at number one?
Absolutely. Number one in my list. So a chap called Dalton Caldwell, who has been a software developer, been out in the valley for a number of years, started off a number of websites, etc. He'd stuck up a post just around, we'd covered it around that Twitter were changing their tone, certainly for third parties. saying, you know, we might restrict access and we've told people not to build clones of our clients, etc.
Mild cockishness.
Well, I think it was more than just mild. I think there was a real change. Well, you just think back to 5 years ago. If it wasn't for the community, if it wasn't for third-party devs, Twitter wouldn't be what it is just now.
Yes, we stated our annoyance at the time. So, yes, it did sound
Dalton Caldwell put up a blog post, and then a few days later, he kind of almost pivoted his app.net product as it is just now and said, look, we launched our own kind of Kickstarter. The reason he didn't use Kickstarter is seemingly you can't launch a software product on Kickstarter. It's all hardware focused. So he says, 30 days, if we can raise $500,000, we'll launch a new Twitter service, but focused on the user, focused on the developer, open APIs. We won't chase advertisers, etc. And you need to pay for it. That was its main difference. And a lot of people have said, and I've said it before on here as well, that, you know, if I could pay Twitter some money a year to allow me to use third-party clients and, you know, don't let me see adverts and don't let me see all this nonsense that I don't want to see, I'd happily do it. If I could pay even just to get access to more tweets, which I can't access now, you know, I don't mind paying my way for these things. I'm not totally caught up in the, you know, everything has to be free or else I won't use it.
No, okay.
So
let's just inject some other side of this, which is, yeah, okay. So you would be willing to pay for Twitter if Twitter didn't have the adverts, but that doesn't mean that paying for something else to be a Twitter without adverts absolutely. And is going to work.
I've got a big issue around about it if it doesn't get the whole thing that makes Twitter isn't just service there, it's the interaction with people. And if people don't come to this new service, it will fail.
And I just, and I absolutely 100% don't see why they would.
Because
most people don't care. Most people don't want an API. Most people don't want to do this. Most people just want to find out what Paris Hilton's doing.
And maybe most people aren't the people I want to talk to.
No, that's true. But then again, I don't think Twitter would be the same without all those people that you don't want to talk to as well. Those people you can snub. So as I think we've covered this so many times before, that social network lives, dies and breathes on its users. And there's a total tipping point as far as you want to use Twitter and maybe pay for it to get rid of some of the adverts. But that's only because it's worthwhile having. And I just call me cynical, call me, you know,
and I am
whatever, but I don't see why someone would pay $50 a year.
And I have the same
issues
that I can see growth being a problem. I can see lots of people not coming to it. But at the same time, it's a kind of ideal. And I thought, well, why not? So I've kind of backed it and I'm there.
It's like this, you know, it's like this nice white pristine room that everyone gets, you know, oh, it's going to be really pretty in there.
I'm just waiting for
there's a bouncer. I'm just waiting
for the kind of blog post to say it's like, you know, it's like Twitter elite. Only the elite can get in, and that will just really hack me off. But I can see other people.
Mind you, you probably get more followers because everyone will be desperate to follow someone.
I've only got one follower. It's not working.
Anyway, that's my utterly cynical. That's my utterly cynical viewpoint. And if it was only people like me in this world, we would never get anything
and
good.
My gut feel is there's more chance of it failing than it working. But if we don't try something different, we'll never know.
And I guess the argument also is that effectively they're following down the moral route which you want to go down, and you're willing to back that as far as it doesn't really matter whether it fails. Maybe someone within Twitter will actually take note of the fact that there are people out there willing to pay not a massive amount of money, but not insubstantial either. And maybe they will offer the paid for service where you can get rid of all the junk that they pass around.
You never know.
You never know.
I'm in my Olympic bubble.
This feel-good factor, they can make you buy anything right now.
Pretty much. I walked into the Apple store yesterday and used their Easy Pay service for the first time. I really could have bought anything in that store.
What, like hold your credit card up to
The credit card. You pick up the box. So I'm holding, Chris can see the Airport Express box that I've got. Picked up my iPhone, fired up the Apple store app, scanned the barcode, buy, and walked out.
With the box?
With the box.
How do they know you've just done that?
I have no idea.
I'm gonna walk into that store.
It might be written.
I might hold a phone up to a product and walk out with the box. Maybe they're probably still chasing you down the road.
Well, interesting, because I hit buy, and then a woman came over and she says, "I don't think you can buy that via the." I says, "No, it's just worked." And she went, "Oh, fantastic! Usually that doesn't work."
Okay.
And I was like, and she went, "Well, that shoe." She says, "Do you want a bag?" And I went, "Well, do I need one?" She went, "No." I went, "Give us one anyway."
she went
and got me a bag, and I walked out.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's far too easy.
But yeah. Yes, that's very easy. I wonder how big a box you can walk away with.
Well,
challenge yourself.
No, we'll use your iTunes account to buy a MacBook Retina, and we'll see if we can walk out with it. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a Google free iPhone?
No.
So there's okay. Next story. Basically, the latest iOS 6 beta has dropped the YouTube app, and we all know that there was the rumblings over the maps, and now we've got Apple Maps, which are a bit rubbish. Although, are they getting better?
They have got better, actually.
There you go. So they are catching up, as we say.
So my initially in Glasgow, the quality was awful. It was like pixely mess. But they've
be
a lot better.
To see how quickly they can catch up, because there's an awful lot of data there stored. It's amazing. But basically, Apple have come out and confirmed that yes, the license to use the iOS app, the YouTube app, had ended. Now there was no indication of who ended it, whether it was just a time ending or whether one of them withdrew. But nevertheless, it's gone.
Yes, and partly I was a bit sad because I use the YouTube app. I found it quite easy to use. Gave me what I wanted. And there's two ways of looking at it. Apple are wanting rid of Google off the iPhone, or are Google wanting to be in control of their own app, because that was an Apple developed application. It wasn't Google developed. And there's so many features that YouTube's brought out that aren't part of that app, including adverts.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, so this is the thing, that it's kind of almost like a win-win thing here, because there's no indication that they won't be able to put an app in the App Store. And therefore,
both parties have already said that. I mean, Apple have said Google are going to develop their own app. Google have said likewise. And if you look at Google Plus on the iPhone and the iPad, it's a fantastic app. So
And YouTube, YouTube as a brand is so all pervasive that pretty much, even though they won't have every single phone guaranteed with it, they're nearly guaranteed to have it on every phone.
Yeah, the bit that sucks is things like when you see the share feature and it says share with Vimeo, and it's like, oh, I want to share it on YouTube, thanks very much. That's where you're going to see a little bit of hurt, you know, if Apple are going to say, well, you can't really send anything to Google very easily.
Yes. Now, whether they would, yeah, they will, well, I'm saying whether they would cut their nose to spite their face. So,
and I still can't see Apple, you know, moving over to Bing. That would be a real, but all their talk of Bing over the last sort of 2-3 years, I still use Google.
Yeah. As my search engine. Never use Bing. And they've done quite a bit, like Google Plus have done quite well in the social networking arena, but have completely, in one sense, not done very well. Same as Bing, they've done exceptionally well in the search arena, but they're still irrelevant.
I mean, the only one I have been trying out is DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo?
DuckDuckGo. It's even worse than you thought.
Yeah, it was. Never heard of it.
It kind of uses Google, but doesn't track you and doesn't filter you and just gives you proper, honest search results like Google used to.
Yes. So, I mean, well, and they're going to become even less honest soon because they're bringing out their knowledge graph. I think you snigger just because, what, knowledge graph?
No, it's just that they're going to become less honest.
Basically, they've talked this up for ages, that they are going to deliver you personal search results. So gone will be the days where you can type in a search into Google and everyone that types that same search would get the same set of results. The idea is that it comes up with information that's more useful to you. One of the examples they give is a sports team. So I can't remember the exact name, but it's like Raiders. If you're in the US, it would come up with one team. But if you're in Australia, Raiders is, you know, for a different team.
Yeah, they said it was Chiefs. So when I do Chiefs just now, it says Chiefs Rugby Union. Or do you mean Kansas City Chiefs? Or do I mean Chiefs, the TV miniseries, which I've never heard of? If I do Rangers, it pops up Rangers FC and says Neil up there in the third division and doing rubbish.
Yeah, and drawing.
See,
that was me with football knowledge. Did you hear that?
Yeah, exactly. Just because you can...
I should step out of that arena because that's it. That's done. That's all my football knowledge.
More than I've got.
So it's going to make best guesses based on a whole host of information about what you actually mean by the search you type in. And chances are it will get it right most of the time. So actually, it will almost be seamless. But they will be using all sorts of different data to come up with that information. So one of the reasons they're pulling all their services together under their Google Plus Black brand and making everything and having privacy that is uniform across all their products is to make sure they got access to all this data so that they can show out these search results. So they will be looking through your emails. They will be looking at your search history. We'll be looking at what you like and what you do online. And they'll be using that to then deliver up search results. And I guess it depends how comfortable you are with all that. And I think most people will like it.
Yeah, and it's switched on just now. I mean, if I do a search...
It's not switched on for me. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I just did a search for Ian Thorpe, and then the right-hand side, I get the little bit from Wikipedia about him when he was born, his height, and also people also search for, so you can see other swimmers in there. And I guess it's the same if you go and search for, anything.
Yes, digital outboxes, podcasting, searching.
So I search for Britney Spears and you get a whole load of stuff about her. You get a whole load of songs, latest posts in Google Plus, and a whole load of albums linked to. So it just seems a bit, I mean, I think we said it before, it just feels a bit like Wikipedia Plus.
Yeah, and so what all these companies keep talking about, the knowledge graphs, and Facebook talk about the graph as well. Effectively, that's giving words that you type into it actual meaning. So it's attaching... Britney Spears isn't just a series of letters, it is actually a person, and that's why it can come back with that data. And that's what they mean by the knowledge graph. It's turning these little words into actual objects and figuring out what objects you actually mean.
Yes.
It's all clever stuff.
I search for London right now and it brings up London 2012 Olympic Games, and it gives me the medal count and gives me today's schedule, is really nice.
Additional information based on, I guess, in some ways, it's kind of what Wolfram Alpha was doing as well, in a different way. But it was sort of, if you search for, kilograms, it would tell you about kilograms and how you came, what makes up a kilogram, and a whole ton of functions and stuff to work out how I'm rabbiting. Anyway, yes, but additional information to your search results. There we go. We're going to go on to talk about a chap now, a chap called Matt Horan. Sorry, Honan. Is it Honan Honan? How do you say it?
I was going to go for Honan.
Okay. Honan. Now he, who is he? You better take this story.
Oh, you wuss. You absolute wuss.
The thing is, I can't remember where he works. He works for one of these.
He works for Wired. He used to work.
Wired, okay.
And he used to work for Gizmodo.
So he's big in the tech world.
He's big in the tech world. And
he's
also
clued up.
He also has a Twitter account of Matt, M-A-T. So he was, and basically he was hacked, and he's posting his own website. He was hacked hard.
A bit of a horror story, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he was using his iPhone, and he picked up his iPhone, and it was kind of, it was white. It was asking for a passcode, and it was the same in the iPad. And then he went to his MacBook, and it is white as well. And he was like, crap. All my data's gone. And the scary thing was that, so iPad and iPhone is bad enough, but for the MacBook, it hadn't backed up in a year. It had a whole lot of photos on it, etc.
Something I've backed up recently. I'm gonna go and do it.
Which wasn't the best. And he held it, to be fair, he held his hands up and says, look, that was pretty rubbish. He has his main desktop that he did back up, and it's all time machined up. And he held his hand up as well and said, I'm in that iOS world where everything just works and it all works really easily, and I use iCloud and it all just hangs together. But what he couldn't figure out was really how he'd been hacked. He thought somebody's guessed his password. He didn't change his password that often. So I think he said it was a 7-digit password that he was using, and had used it on his Apple account for a number of years. But it was a fairly unguessable one. It was like a, you know, a 7-digit number or something like that.
Yeah.
And he thought somebody's just brute forced, you know, just kept on turning away, and eventually hacked in. And I mean, the timeline is pretty scary. 4:33. Somebody called AppleCare. So he's a journalist, so he did a bit of digging and he found out what actually happened. And it wasn't brute force, it was socially done. So 4:33, Apple's tech support records indicated that somebody called AppleCare, claiming to be him. They couldn't get his, the guy that called said, "I can't get into my .me email account." Apple issued a temporary password, despite the caller not being able to answer all the security questions that he'd set up. But he did this after the hacker supplied two pieces of information, which was basically a home address and the last 4 digits of the credit card.
Yeah, which appear on, in this country, appear on most receipts and all those kind of things.
Exactly. So that was at 4:33. By 4:50, a password reset information had arrived in his inbox, but he doesn't really use his .mail account, really checks it. But it was immediately trashed anyway. So as soon as it came in...
I was going to say, they had access to his email, so they just trashed it.
Because his... it was all then linked, because his accounts are linked up, you know, so it's usual with these services, you've got... You might have a primary account, but, you know, like Gmail, for example, always say, give us a secondary account, so if we can issue a reset.
Yeah, so you just say... You say where you want your password reset emails to go, and generally you just whack them to your main email address. So if someone's got access into your main email address... Of course, you they're going to be able to do password resets because they just say, "I want to reset to my this account," and then obviously so those reset emails come through.
Gmail, 2 minutes later was reset. 2 minutes past five, the Twitter password was reset. At 5 p.m., they'd used iCloud's Find My tool and wiped the iPhone. At 5:01, they wiped the iPad, and at 5:05, they wiped the MacBook.
I mean,
so within half an hour.
Can we add these guys to the cocks? Because they are, no one could beat them.
And awful, the scary thing, horrible. The scary thing was, and this, I mean, it ended up his Matt Twitter account got abused, you know, and that's all they wanted it for. The reason they did this hack was they wanted to use the Matt account, and they put up a whole load of racial, homophobic posts, etc. And lots of people were going, "Holy crap, why are you posting this?" But what they didn't realise was that he also had access, even though he now works for Wired, he still had access to Gizmodo's Twitter account. So their Twitter account got damaged as well. There's all the posts getting put up. Initially, Gizmodo were putting up things like, "Oh, it looks like we can't trust our ex-employees. Well, thanks, Matt," and all that kind of stuff. Not realising what had actually happened. He actually, a couple of days later, once he started getting his life back together, his digital life back together, he actually got in touch with the hackers. So he confirmed, you know, that they had got the right people. And basically their way in was initially started with Amazon.
Yeah, so they used a combo attack on two different companies who had different security statements, I guess.
Yep.
So one considered the last 4 digits to be irrelevant, and one considered the last 4 digits to be suitably private.
Yeah, so the Amazon one was, you call Amazon, tell them you're an account holder, you want to add a credit card number to the account, all you need is the name of the account, associated email address, and the billing address. They got a new credit card added, and then you call back after you've done that and say you've lost access to your account, you give them name, billing address, and the new credit card number, and boom, you're in.
Yeah, so you've just added a number and then you just reuse that to then actually get them to.
And they got the last 4 digits of the previous credit card, and those last 4 digits are all you need to access your, from an Apple point of view, Apple just needs a home address, and they looked up his Whois details in his website and got his home address.
Yeah, it's almost like they obviously have their security questions as well, but they're willing to forego those. Clear, up until now, they've been willing to forego those if you can come up with several other bits of data.
Yes. Yes. So all in all, pretty horrible. Very quickly, however, Amazon changed their policies. So this all kind of broke Sunday, Monday of this week. By Tuesday, Amazon had handed down its customer service department a policy change. that nobody could call in and change their account settings, such as credit cards, email addresses. You couldn't just do
it. Yes, they pretty much, they put a halt to it while they could figure out what they wanted to do about it.
And Apple also said to their support staff on Tuesday, stop processing Apple ID password changes requested over the phone. And they're basically working out how they do it more securely. It is a really big issue because a lot of these companies are asking us to trust us with a whole lot of data, and cloud is the future.
But then again, it isn't. How do you prove that a legitimate user, this is what they're going to be figuring out, how do you prove that a legitimate user wants to get back in their account when they've forgotten their password? It does legitimately happen. Everyone's used the password request.
And everybody's forgotten a password. All those things. Doesn't matter what tools you have or how smart you are or how little services you've got, everybody forgets a password.
Of course they do. Especially for random accounts.
Yep. So a scary story. I guess in some ways a good... The good side of it is that this guy's a tech journalist. He's made some mistakes, but by being able to blog about it and post about it, it's kind of maybe a bit of a reminder for us all.
Yeah, because this probably happens to other people. Yep. I mean, we just never hear
about it. When you talk to the hackers, he says they're doing it all the time. You know, it's just one of these things that's happening all the time. A lot of people don't have the power or don't have the audience to say, you know, look, this is what happened. So a few lessons that I'd certainly noted down. First one is backup.
It is the first lesson in owning a PC, isn't it? Backup. But as I said just at the opening of this thing, I'm nowhere near backed up, and I need to get on it. And it's just another thing to remind you to go do it.
And I guess the only thing I am backed up, but it's all local. There's an awful lot that, you know, I guess if there was a fire, etc., it'd all be gone. Mm. So I do need to sort out the kind of cloud backup side of things and do something properly with that. Don't daisy chain. So this was from Matt's kind of post a couple of days later. I shouldn't have daisy chained two such vital accounts, my Google and my iCloud account together. I shouldn't have used
it's so easy to say that.
I shouldn't have used the same email prefix across multiple accounts. So he was using mhonan@gmail.com and honan@me.com. So how many of us are using, you know, E&D? a whole lot of different domains.
As many as possible, surely. Yep.
You know, so it makes it dead easy for me and other people, but it also makes it easy for somebody hacking and thinking, I wonder if he's used the same. Oh, yeah, he has. And what he was also suggesting is he should have had a recovery address that's only used for recovery without being tied to core services, which is...
So he means a recovery email address with a separate access, separate password on it and all those kind of nice.
You know, which is fairly easy to set up. You know, you can get an email address.
But probably when you then you want to go and get into your recovery email and you go... Now, what was the password?
Exactly. So, just on that, don't use same passwords for the same services as one of the other ones that came out, which is, I know, is a common thing. You know, so use LastPass, use 1Password, try and use some of these services that will generate random passwords for you and store them.
Now, LastPass and 1Password, does that stores passwords locally? Is that correct? It doesn't store, or does it store them in the cloud?
You can. You can store them in things like Dropbox. So certainly for 1Password, you can store the 1Password file in Dropbox, so it can be shared across platforms and services.
You're as secure as 1Password in as an option.
Yeah, and LastPass is on the cloud anyway, so it's out there.
So then, I mean, that's always my issue with these services. Yeah, it makes you secure across all the other accounts, but you do have to make sure that remains secure.
The other option is using something like KeePass, you know, which is the file has got to sit locally. And with 1Password, you can keep the file local. You know, it just makes it harder because you then got to if
have a local file on each.
Yeah, how do I keep them in sync, etc.? There's nothing easy. Something else that lots of people suggested, two-factor security, which I didn't have on in my Google account, but would have helped in this case.
Yes, and it's quite easy to set that up, so that's definitely worth
it. And I have set it up this week. I initially found it a bit of a pain, I've got to be honest. It felt quite painful, and I couldn't...
It's annoying when you log into your bank account nowadays, but you have to do it.
Yeah, and now that it's up and running, it's fairly easy. You know, it just, you know, I've got the little Google Authenticator app on the iPhone. It's an iPhone, it's an Android.
It is available on Android. I've got that. I just haven't used it.
And it's painless. But it is more painful than just the 1Password. But again, it's worth doing. The other thing he said is he shouldn't use Find My Mac. So that's
He said it was useful for his mobile phone and his iPad. But why would you want to have it on your desktop, basically, is what his argument was. And I guess it's a good argument. Why let some, why even risk someone being able to remote wipe your main desktop?
I guess the issue is if it's stolen, you know, if your data is stolen, but.
That's a two-step thing. They have to break in your house to do that.
Yeah. And that was the argument for most people. You know, it's like,
It's more likely you're going to lose a phone or an iPad
absolutely
out in the wild than it is tucking your desktop under your arm.
One option is to use a service called Prey if you're on the Mac. So it's more secure than Find My Mac. It's not tied into to iCloud or anything like that. Change passwords regularly. And also don't make your address public. I know some people are saying it's already out there. I know you've said before that my data's out there already, but try not make your address public.
Yeah, whenever anyone asks for your address in a form, that's like, well, Facebook is, why not just not put your address there?
I've got to be honest, even with something I've not done, which I'm going to start doing, which means having to go and change a lot of the answers and a lot of these services, but I gave honest answers to my, you know, when's your first school and all that kind of good stuff, you know, all these security questions, and the kind of advice is don't, you know, give it something fairly random that only you could answer. Don't go with something that's nice and obvious that a LinkedIn search or a Facebook search would obviously say there's your first school.
Yes, where is your first school? Banana. Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the kind of idea, isn't it?
So it's a fairly sobering story, but I think we can all take a few little lessons out of that one.
As much as anything, kick you up the arse to go and do something about your own security. Go get yourself secure. We need these jolts every now and again because we don't want that happening to us. And the methods they were using, okay, they were pretty dedicated about it, but a little kid could do it. And that's the frightening thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it was all socially done. You know, it wasn't like a guy hacking as we would normally think, you know, with key loggers or something stupid like that. It was a guy making a phone call and bluffing his way through it.
Yeah. Okay, that's the end of the news. But we have a pick. Ian, you've got a pick for me?
I have a pick just for you, yeah, Chris. I thought we'd done this before as a pick, and I have searched.
I'm almost certain that we have covered Pixelmator before. Sorry.
I think you should do it now.
No, I'm pretty sure we have actually touched on it, whether it was a pick or whether it was just a...
To be honest, I can't be arse checking again. So Pixelmator is my pick this week, and there's two reasons. One, it's just been updated. So it's at version 2.1. It's in the Mac App Store.
2.1 Cherry.
I do apologize for not getting it accurate. But it now comes with iCloud support, so you can sync.
You can have your account hacked and have everything removed from it.
Your latest and greatest design can be stolen. It's got Retina and Mountain Lion support. It's also been reduced in price, so they've got it on sale at the moment. It's only £10.49 in the App Store. And for what that tool can do, that is an absolute bargain. See, if you look at Photoshop and you think, oh, I wish I could afford it, or you've hacked, you know, you've got a cracked version of Photoshop on it, you probably don't need it, and Pixelmator will do everything you need to do. There's some great tutorials online as well at their website, and also roundabout, you know, it's actually picked up quite a lot of traction. So I just use it for doing all my little, I don't do a lot of graphics, but when I do, I just fire up Pixelmator. Find it's very, very good. Okay.
And you can find information at pixelmator.com, and it's on the App Store.
Aye.
So good. That is the end of our podcast for this week. And if you want to find out more, you can at www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us info@digitaloutbox.com, and we are on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK, and Ian, where can we find you? Don't tell me your address, though.
My blog is iand.net, I'm on Twitter as Sweeper, and I'm on app.net as Ian Dick.
Excellent. I would be interested to know whether you get any followers by next week.
I've got one already.
Oh, excellent.
I was excited.
Hello! Was that an echo? Yeah, I think it was. We will speak to you next week. See you later. Bye.
Bye. Yep.
I'll save you.
I'm doing them on the website right now. Brand new page. List of penises.